Okay, I'd like to call this meeting of the Oregon Board of Forestry to order. And first, we'll perform the roll call. Mike Rose, I think we have zooming in. Mike? Well, I'll keep going. Nils Christofferson.
Here.
Cindy Deacon-Williams.
Here.
Joe Justice.
Here.
Jim Kelly.
Here.
Brenda McComb.
Here.
I'm Tom Imeson, so we do have a quorum, and we will have Mike. It's just logistics. He's away and couldn't be with us today. I also want to give a couple of reminders. This public meeting will be live streamed all day, so it's helpful for those of you who have electronic devices to silence them during the duration of the meeting. Also want to remind people that to ensure that the board has the opportunity to conduct all of the business on the agenda for its meetings, public comment for agenda topics will be limited to no more than 30 minutes and received upon conclusion of the topic's presentation. We have a sign-up sheet for public comment on a first-come, first-served basis. So with that, we'll now proceed with the consent agenda. Is there a motion for approval of consent items A through D?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to declare a potential conflict of interest with Ken Cummings being appointed Emergency Fire Cost Committee. He works for Hancock Forest Management, so I'll abstain from that portion of the consent agenda.
Okay. We'll note that for the record.
Motion to approve the consent agenda.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? I would note that one of the item that you mentioned, the person has been doing this for an incredibly long period of time. It's really impressive, that kind of public service. So, yeah. The next item, is the state forester's comments.
Thanks, Tom. It's been a busy two months since the January meeting, primarily focused on the legislature. The 2020 legislative session has a greenhouse gas initiative, the Council on Wildfire Response legislation, bill resulting from the agreement between timber and environmental groups, and our fire financial request. So we've been pretty busy supporting discussions of those bills. The session is still ongoing, so outcomes have not been determined, but I will provide you an update on the status of the bills that affect forestry. Now I'll close out with an update on shared stewardship. Starting on a positive note, I joined other agricultural and forestry leaders in co-hosting the fourth annual Portland reception of the Cultivating Change Foundation. Other hosts included Alexis Taylor, Director of Oregon Department of Agriculture, David Dillon, Agricultural Association Executive, Christina McNitt, President of Oregon Forest and Industry Councils, Anita Nina Azurinko, Interim Vice Provost and Director of OSU Extension, Travis Joseph, President and CEO of American Forest Resource Council, Alan Sams, Dean of the OSU College of Agricultural Science, Anthony Davis, Dean of the OSU College of Forestry, and Susanna Morgan, CEO of Oregon Food Bank. So a broader list of co-hosts. The foundation's mission is to value and elevate lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender individuals in the agricultural industry through advocacy, education, and community. It's always inspiring for me to work with other leaders on creating positive change for LGBTQ individuals who are passionate about agriculture and forestry by supporting the foundation's missions. Their missions align with our values of diversity, equity, inclusion in all aspects of our business, and our vision for a workplace that reflects the diversity and values of Oregonians, and a safe, inclusive, and supportive workplace that values all employees and allows them to reach their full potential and providing excellent public service. And I just want to thank Jim, who joined us at the reception. So that was really nice to see you there. As I said, the 2020 legislative session is still ongoing, and it's required to end on March 8th, so 5 days from now. There are a number of policy and budget bills that would impact the department, but as with every legislative session, we won't know the scope and the scale of the impacts until the session are over. I will provide an overview of the bills that would affect the agency. And all, just to be clear, so I don't have to repeat this, all the bills I have discussed have passed Ways and Means and are in the queue for floor sessions. Senate Bill 1530 establishes greenhouse gas reduction, regulation, and pricing policies for Oregon. The bill is broad in scope, intending to bring energy-generating and large energy-consuming sectors under a carbon emission cap. Forestry and other natural resources are identified as mitigation and adaptation drivers. The bill also sets greenhouse gas emission reduction goals. The components that affect ODF or require ODF involvement, either in establishing the program or in ongoing implementation and monitoring, include participation in the development of a forestry carbon offset protocol, analysis and reporting on the impact to the wood fiber supply from forestry offset projects, and we do that annually, and implementing wildfire mitigation projects per the Climate Investment Fund. And the bill does fund the necessary capacity to carry out these functions. Of note, Board of Forestry lands are excluded from participating in the forestry offset markets until 2030. However, common school lands are permitted to participate from the initiation of the program. There are a lot of bills on the coming from the Wildfire Council, and it's settled in. One has moved, which has been modified many times, and it's the Governor's Wildfire Council bill. It includes several components related to wildfire resiliencies, recommendations from the wildfire councils. So including the electric companies must operate in compliance with a risk-based wildfire protection plan approved by the Public Utilities Committee, in consultation with ODF and local emergency services. ODF must oversee development and maintenance of a statewide map of wildfire risks that allows assessment of risk at the property ownership level and is accessible to the public in electronic form. We're supposed to collaborate with the state fire marshals and other entities on this map. ODF and OSU, in consultation with Department of Land, Conservation and Development, are required to analyze each wildfire risk region and develop recommendations to reduce wildfire risk. We're also supposed to develop recommendations regarding possible means for implementing the final recommendations produced by the Governor's Council on Wildfire Response. And then finally, ODF is to establish not more than 15 projects designed to reduce wildfire danger on public or private forest land and rangelands. The department's to identify, design, oversee the implementation, administration, maintenance, and evaluation of these projects. And projects are to be completed by June 30th, by the end of the biennium of 2021. The bill provides $24.4 million, two permanent positions for the development and management of the wildfire risk map, and nine limited duration positions for establishing and overseeing the projects. It also provides for the extension of 30 seasonal positions to work on the projects. $21 million of the appropriations is for contracted work on the projects. So the majority is to go on the ground. House Bill 4168 requires the governor to organize and facilitate mediation sessions between representatives of forest industries and representatives of environmental interests in accordance with the Memorandum of Understanding announced by the governor on February 10th, 2020. The goals of the mediation are science-informed forest practices policy rooted in compromise, including the pursuit of a statewide habitat conservation plan that would provide greater level of business certainty to forest landowners and certainty for the survival and recovery of threatened and endangered species and ensure that drinking water and aquatic resources are protected. The bill appropriates $175,000 to the governor's office for the mediation. It also requires forest operators to identify a 90-day window of operations for helicopter pesticide application and provide notice by 7 p.m. the day before the operation is planned. It also requires post-application reporting. Forest operators are to do this through our FERNS, our electronic notification system, and concerned residents or certain water users would also be able to register in FERN to receive an announcement of nearby helicopter pesticide applications. Additionally, the bill requires helicopter pesticide application buffers around inhabited dwelling schools and noted water intakes and adjacent to streams on forest land governed by the Forest Practice Act. And then finally, the bill directs the Board of Forestry to adopt rules to make the 2017 board rules regarding salmon, steelhead, and bull trout applicable to the Siskiyou region effective on January 1 of 2021. So to complete this work and primarily to expand the functionality of FERNS, the bill provides some $894,000 as well as two positions. And the majority of the appropriated funds, about $740,000, are for the build out of FERNS. And then finally, as you know, we have been working with the Forestry Financial Oversight Committee. You'll hear more about this topic in the financial update. But we built a cash flow model to identify our need. You're aware that the model suggested it would be out of general fund. It's by mid-May. And so we submitted two requests to the Joint Ways and Committee on Ways and Means. And the first request was for $31 million added to our base budget to maintain core business through the end of the biennium. And that doesn't include any large fire costs, plus $20 million added to our base budget for a mild fire season for large fire costs, and $700,000 for the fire finance consultant, MGO. And so that first request was for $51,700,000. The second request was $92 million to ensure we can conduct firefighting activities in a severe fire season. And you'll recall the range we've seen since 2013 are from $20 million to $112 million. And House Bill 5204, which is the end of session bill, it modifies appropriation, includes $51.7 million of general fund for the department, which corresponds to the first request. And I'll pause there if there's any questions. Great. Related to our budget, we did, speaking to Ken Cummings and Doug Graff, got up at some god-awful hour in the morning and zoomed into London to present our program to our insurance underwriters. So our broker is currently filling out the policy options for our $25 million, $50 million deductible insurance policy for covering wildfire costs. Currently, it's over 90% at this filled. At this time, there's a number of underwriters, and we expect the premium to hold at $3,975,000. This represents an 8% increase over last year, and that is actually good given that the catastrophic insurance markets, which we're in, are continuing to right size, and average premiums are increasing between 20 and 25%. So, thanks to Doug and Ken, they've successfully separated us from higher risk clients and kept our increase pretty good given the market. The Emergency Fire Cost Committee met yesterday and unanimously recommended that we proceed with the insurance policy if the price continues to hold at under $4 million. So. And then moving on to shared stewardship, on February 24th, Glenn Casamassa, the regional forester, myself, and Chad Davis presented an informational hearing at the Senate Committee on Wildfire Reduction and Recovery on shared stewardship and good neighbor authority. Glenn thanked the legislature, Governor Brown, and the state agency partners for the bold and innovative leadership Oregon is taking to enhance collaboration with the federal agencies towards reducing wildfire risk and improving forest health. Glenn focused on what shared stewardship means to the Forest Service and how it can be a game changer on how we improve forests, grasslands, and watershed across all of our boundaries. The Forest Service believes that shared stewardship at its core is about a new way of doing business. It's not another initiative or an action item. Rather, it's a way to accomplish and build on existing efforts while leveraging our combined resources to accomplish mutual goals for reducing wildfire risk and improving forest health conditions. So he had some bullets. Shared stewardship is setting mutual goals with state and tribal partners, local governments, and other stakeholders, convening to reach shared decisions, working across boundaries, and seeking outcomes that improve forests, grasslands, and watershed at scale. I provided an Oregon perspective and agree that at its core, shared stewardship is about a way of doing business. And I think it's the Oregon way of collaboration, putting aside our beliefs, affiliations, and other divisive factors, rolling up our sleeves and working together to find solutions. The shared stewardship agreement establishes a framework that allows the state and the Forest Service to work collaboratively to accomplish mutual goals, further common interests, and effectively respond to a increasing suite of challenges facing communities, landscapes, natural resources, and cultural resources of the state of Oregon. Importantly, it formalizes and gives durability to our ongoing commitment to and recognition of the vital role of federal, state, local, and tribal governments, the forest product industry, environmental groups, Oregon's 26 forest collaboratives, and so many others in managing Oregon's forests to enhance environmental, economic, and community sustainability. I also focused on next steps, and while we have agreed to focus on outcomes, some work out there is to develop the set of metrics that measure progress on creating those outcomes of healthy, resilient forests, vibrant local communities, healthy watersheds with functional aquatic habitat, and quality outdoor opportunities for all Oregonians. We also need to develop a science-based and tractable monitoring and accountability program to gauge progress and adjust the approach accordingly. We do have a set of operating principles that include supporting and building on Oregon's collaborative approach for developing local solutions and having local input to statewide priorities, desired outcomes, and metrics. We also recognize the need for an open, transparent, inclusive, and accountable process that will allow other interested parties to join in the agreement. And to this end, we will be reaching out and convening meetings with organizations and groups in the public and private sector to seek their input and interest in being a party to the agreement. And with that, we'll need to develop a governance process to ensure we are accountable not only for achieving the outcomes, but adhering to our principle. And finally, fully embracing shared stewardship requires a common understanding and changing our agency cultures. And so we have agreed to communicate on a regular basis, and we're doing that to enhance and develop institutional arrangements necessary to facilitate the above activities, including exploring cross-agency sharing of employees in developmental assignments and other details. And to that end, on March 2nd of this year, Chad Davis started a two-year detail with the Forest Service to help operationalize shared stewardship in Oregon and Washington. So he will be here today at the courtesy of his new boss, to take us through our planning. You're not in uniform. Yeah. He remains an ODF employee, and has return rights. And I'm really excited about the opportunity to do our work more strategically and across landscapes. Shared stewardship challenges us to think differently about how we integrate all of our tools, grants, et cetera, under a unified approach. And I'm really excited about what we can create over the next 6 to 18 months, particularly with Chad in his new role. And we will be recruiting for both Chad's position and the Federal Forest program lead, and we're allowing the program lead position to be a job rotation or a detail for a U.S. Forest Service employee as well as state employees. So with that, any questions?
Okay, any comments from board members?
I jump in real quick. I just wanted to, building off that whole discussion on shared stewardship, we had a good local demonstration of that intent and joint aspiration through application for CFLRP, the Northern Blues, that involved both the Umatilla National Forest, the Willow Whitman National Forest, ODF staff, DNR staff, several tribes, hundreds of private landowners, the NRCS, OFRI, OSU Extension, American Forest Foundation, it is unlikely, given current budget conditions at USDA, that we will get funded this year, although we've been informed by the Chief of the Forest Service that it was an extremely well-rated and appreciated proposal, and they're looking for finding other funding within the Forest Service that can help get that started. But sort of true to, I think, sort of Oregon's nature, the district rangers and ODF staff and other partners have begun to break this larger proposal into subgroups where they're creating shared stewardship working groups in Wallowa County and Walla Walla and Umatilla. That are beginning to look at the things we can do with the resources that we currently have to advance that vision. And so it's created a really nice framework for multi-agency, all lands, shared stewardship to begin work. It definitely needs additional resources to achieve the larger land impact that it needs, but everybody's pretty excited and motivated to move forward, and there's good and important new engagement and contribution from the tribes as well. So it's a pretty exciting initiative. And then secondly, just we are excited to be working with the Committee on Family Forest Lands to help organize their tour out to Wallowa County in May. And one of the things that we'll be talking about is the importance in Eastern Oregon of sort of the joint system of federal forest land, industrial lands, and private forest lands to maintaining infrastructure, workforce, the economics, and the larger landscape health and connectivity issues. So
do you have anything that's ready to go right now in case we get a bunch of money we have to spend?
We do. So one of the pieces on the CFLRP was a lead on a lot of acres that have been through NEPA, that have final decisions, signed decisions, and a lot of that is around fuel reduction and wildfire risk reduction. So there's actually quite a lot of shelf stock that is ready to go.
And one other point is the state of Oregon did submit a request to have CFLR fully funded at the $80 million level. Hopefully it might have an impact. That would be important.
Yeah.
All right. We do have one individual who has signed up to appear, Jim King.
Good morning.
Welcome.
I drove in this morning from Eagle Crest. A beautiful morning. I watched the sunrise in the rearview mirror. I'm the person who sent you this rather, I guess, audacious key fire matters before the board. Very serious. And I want to speak to that as a problem, but I also want to talk about the solution. I was on the phone this morning with the National Forest Foundation about a solution that I think would put ODF back in driver's seat in terms of a positive kind of position. So I saw your guidelines in terms of 3 minutes to 30 minutes. I'll keep it at 3 minutes and let you ask questions, but I want to highlight what I've given to you. This is everything and more than you ever want to know. But significantly on the front page, you have a map. This is chart. With the 177 lightning strikes, none of them were anywhere near where the B&B fire started. So we have proof positive that that fire was not lightning caused. And it changes everything. I mean, it's a huge deal. And you also have further in the packet, November 1 communication from Holly Jukes, the supervisor, the new supervisor for Houston National Forest, admitting that data is accurate. She's saying your freedom of information request is past its due date, whatever, but because of the severity of that fire, 3 people dead, 92,000 acres burned, every last old growth tree in the Houston National Forest gone to that fire. And B, as the Oregon Department of Forestry, had a major role in that. 2 of the 4 people we know were involved in coordinating that were from the Department of Forestry, Oregon Department of Forestry. George Pont, Bob Young. I assume they're both retired. And so it's a huge deal. I think it's an idea that would get ODF back on track to be a leader in terms of positive stuff. What you'll see in here is everything we've really done. You have the spiral bound with something we call the connecting dots, something I wrote within the first couple of weeks of the fire. Interestingly, the sheriff, Shane Nelson, sheriff of Deschutes County, called up and said, I understand you're in the thick of it. I said, I don't want to think about it. It's real smoky. He said, I'd like 2 copies of that report. I said, I can do that. I said, I'll go by Pony Express and Sisters and get it spiral bound. He said, I don't need that. I said, I need that. We need to know what we knew that first few weeks. Shane Nelson gave a great interview. I teach interviewing college class. Shane Nelson gave a very good interview, asked me what I knew for sure, who said that, how do you know that for sure? Then he said, well, I asked you for 2 because I'm going to put the second one. He walked out in the lobby there and put urgent on it. I'm no fool. I know he's doing that for my benefit. He said, I'm going to put this on the desk of the FBI agent. And that FBI agent, Rhonda Schatz, comes in at 8 o'clock. I can't ask you to do this as a public employee, but if you would, if you'd come in at 9 o'clock, and if she pretends not to know, you get out of there. And I'm thinking, holy criminy, I'm a retired psych guy. What's this about? He said, that's all I can tell you. I said, get out of there. He said, get out of the area, get out of the country if you could. And I thought, this is a little more exciting retirement than I had in mind. I'm also in Camp Sherman, not able to live in Camp Sherman because of my own safety. How's that for Oregon? It's not good. Same law enforcement saying, I've been broken into 5 times, was broken into before I left, 5 times, dead animal parts in my driveway, threatening phone calls. And all that, I think the intent was to do what they did to Doug Sokol, which was to murder him, to shut him up. But for me, I'm counterproductive. It only makes me angrier. And there are 4 of us on this, on this cover sheet, Brian Metke, Pete Shea, and Roger White, who've hung in through the whole thing, very knowledgeable people, very committed to saying to the federal government, we're not going to let you jam a lie down our throat and expect us to, you know, tolerate that. And we haven't, and we won't. And this, obviously, this chart shows that we've been right all along. Going forward, I think you can kind of plow through. This is about everything been written and then some, some stuff that probably shouldn't have been read. Going forward, I talked this morning to the National Forest Foundation people, and I'm in line for a phone call from Mary Mitsous, who's the CEO of the National Forest Foundation, about an idea of getting some kind of joint agency task force together. Tom Andrade, who is a former employee, one of the most talented, intelligent, credible people, would be a wonderful person for you guys to find and pull out of retirement to lead that. We get the agencies together and say, okay, this is what happened. BLM, Forest Service, ODF, you know, how do we turn this around so we can begin to reestablish our credibility within the communities we serve? Because Tom himself told me that ever since the B&B and all the doubts, you know, everybody, nobody believed the B&B fire was lightning. Nobody, unless they were paid to do so. So the credibility just went to hell in a handbasket. Tom said it was noticeably harder to work in the community after the B&B story, you know. So what I would repeat, strongly suggest that you take the lead. Get someone like Tom. I think Tom would be ideal to call together. I'd be willing to stick around for lunch and talk to somebody if they want to kind of do that. Representatives from other forest management agencies and say, okay, what do we do to get past this black eye? And I think Tom's the person to do it. And I think that's the strategy. Now, I can't speak for the National Forest Foundation, but Friday I'm going to lobby hard. Mary Mitsous was instrumental in my group, the Upper Deschutes National Resource Coalition, being the first in Oregon to file a fire protection plan. Wyden came out and thought we were wonderful, gave us some prize and so forth and so on. And she salted us $150,000 in organization development money. And I said, but Mary, I'm a consultant in that field. She said, that's my point. You should be out doing other things rather than doing that. So I know her well. That organization, as you know, is growing by leaps and bounds as people. They have 10 new staff members. That tells you that people are scared to death about what might happen to the national forest under this climate in D.C. And so I think you could do, I mean, I think Mary would be a real appropriate person to tie into this in some way. Like I say, I can't speak for her, but that's going to be my lobby on Friday when I have that half an hour with her. So, questions?
Any questions?
Well, thank you for bringing this and giving us all this material that we can
say in closing
digest.
That delay and denial are not appropriate responses. It's already been delayed and denied for a long time. All that does is motivate us in Camp Sherman to say, no way. So thank you for your time.
Thank you.